don't cross them lines. What you like, what I like, why can't we both be right?
This is Marissa, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. This is your Sunday edition of Academics on Air. I am thrilled to have guest Chris in studio today. I'm sorry, you don't have a mic right now. Oh, here you go. You can have that mic if you want it.
Thank you.
So thank you for being here.
Yeah, no problem.
And can you give a very general idea of the theme for today's discussion?
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to be talking about a piece we read in Contemporary Catholicism. It's a document that came out of the Vatican about contraception. And it's kind of a deep sort of, I don't know, I think it'll make people a little bit angry, maybe. Maybe, I don't know, it stirred up some feelings for me. So we'll see.
Great. I'm excited to get into that a little bit later. So I'm going to thematically go into a song by Hozier that people listening might know and relates to our theme of religion today. Hope you enjoy.
My lover's got humor. She's the giggle at a funeral. Knows everybody's disapproval. I should have worshipped her sooner. If the heavens ever did speak, she's the last true mouthpiece. Every Sunday's getting more bleak, a fresh poison each week. We were born sick, you heard them say it. My church offers no absolutes. She tells me worship in the bedroom. The only heaven I'll be sent to is when I'm alone with you. I was born sick, but I love it. Command me to be
just love you. But long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me. So what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you.
Okay, welcome back. You just heard God Only Knows from the Beach Boys and Take Me to Church from Hozier. Is that how you pronounce Hozier?
I think so.
Okay. So a clear theme emerging of religion, and I will get your mic on in a second, Jenna. I'm so sorry. So we are here today with Chris in studio, and once again, I'm Marissa, and Jenna is across from me without a mic at the moment, and we're going to hear a bit about the Catholic Church and their stance on contraception right when that was kind of coming into the spotlight.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So take it away, Chris.
Great. So this piece is titled Humanae Vitae, and it's from Pope Paul VI, sort of in the late 60s when the contraceptive pill was just being developed, and there was talk about whether it was within the morality dictated by the church to actually use artificial contraception. And there's just some interesting bits in here that I think, you know, they're still relevant today. This is still an ongoing discussion among Catholics and in the Catholic Church. Here we go. I'm going to skip around a little bit, and the parts I cut out, I'll try to explain what I'm leaving out and why I'm leaving it out. Here we go. To his venerable brothers and patriarchs, archbishops, bishops, and other local ordinaries in peace and communion with the Apostolic See, to the clergy and faithful to the whole Catholic world, and to all men of goodwill. Honored brothers and dear sons, health and apostolic benediction. The transmission of human life is a most serious role, in which married people collaborate freely and responsibly with God the Creator. It has always been a source of great joy to them, even though it sometimes entails many difficulties and hardships. The fulfillment of this duty has always posed problems to the conscience mind of married people, but the recent course of human society and the concomitant changes have provoked new questions. The Church cannot ignore these questions, for they concern matters intimately connected with the life and happiness of human beings. The changes that have taken place are of considerable importance and varied in nature. In the first place, there is the rapid increase in population, which has made many fear that world population is going to grow faster than available resources, with the consequence that many families in developing countries would be faced with greater hardships. This can easily induce public authorities to be tempted to take even harsher measures to avert this danger. There is also the fact that not only working and household conditions, but the greater demands made both in the economic and educational field pose a living situation in which it is frequently difficult these days to provide properly for a large family. Also noteworthy is a new understanding of the dignity of woman and her place in society, of the value of conjugal love in marriage and the relationship of conjugal acts to this love. But the most remarkable development of all is to be seen in man's stupendous progress in the domination and rational organization of the forces of nature to the point that he is endeavoring to extend this control over every aspect of his own life, over his body, over his mind and emotions, over his social life, and even over the laws that regulate the transmission of life. So the document at this point goes into like some questions that the church has, and there's sort of the questions that, you know, would come up if you're just hearing that sort of first bit or just thinking about contraception. So I'm just going to skip over those. So one important piece here is that the church sort of reasserts its moral authority before going into its argument about contraception. And that was something that stood out to me. So what the Pope says here is, this kind of question requires from the teaching authority of the church a new and deeper reflection on the principles of the moral teaching on marriage. A teaching which is based on the natural law is illuminated and enriched by divine revelation. No member of the faithful could possibly deny that the church is competent in her magisterium to interpret the natural moral law. It is in fact indisputable, as our predecessors have many times declared, that Jesus Christ, when he communicated his divine power to Peter and the other apostles, and sent them to teach all nations his commandments, constituted them as the authentic guardians and interpreters of the whole moral law, not only, that is, of the law of the gospel, but also of the natural law. For the natural law, too, declares the will of God, and its faithful observance is necessary for men's eternal salvation. In carrying out this mandate, the Church has always issued appropriate documents on the nature of marriage, the correct use of conjugal rights, and the duties of spouses. These documents have been more copious in recent times. So then the Pope talks a little bit about a commission that was formed to sort of look into this contraception issue and see what the community, the Catholic community, thought about contraception as a concept and whether it was moral and within the doctrine of the church. So he outlines that study a little bit and then goes on to offer a response as sort of this infallible representative of the church. So this is when he actually starts making an argument about contraception and trying to show that, or trying to show the church's position on it. So the Pope writes, however, the conclusions arrived at by the commission could not be considered by us as definitive and absolutely certain, dispensing us from the duty of examining personally this serious question. This was all the more necessary because within the commission itself, there was not complete agreement concerning the moral norms to be proposed, and especially because certain approaches and criteria for a solution to this question had emerged which were at variance with the moral doctrine on marriage constantly taught by the magisterium of the church. Consequently, now that we have sifted carefully the evidence sent to us and intently studied the whole matter, as well as prayed constantly to God, we, by virtue of the mandate entrusted to us by Christ, intend to give our reply to this series of grave questions. Then he outlines some definitions that are going to be important to the argument he's giving. So he writes, married love particularly reveals its true nature and nobility when we realize that it takes its origin from God, who is love, the Father from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named. Marriage, then, is far from being the effect of chance or the result of the blind evolution of natural forces. It is, in reality, the wise and provident institution of God the Creator, whose purpose was to effect in man his loving design. As a consequence, husband and wife, through that mutual gift of themselves, which is specific and exclusive to them alone, develop that union of two persons in which they perfect one another, cooperating with God in the generation and rearing of new lives. The marriage of those who have been baptized is, in addition, invested with the dignity of a sacramental sign of grace, for it represents the union of Christ and his church. So basically, like, what I take away from this, and I think most people would take away from this, is that, you know, marriage is this, you know, very sacred thing that has this connection to what the church would consider the marriage between Christ and the church itself. So it is a representative, you know, physical human thing that actually stands in place for that. And so he goes on a little further to define what responsible parenthood is as part of that duty of a married couple. So he writes, "Married love, therefore, requires of husband and wife the full awareness of their obligations in the matter of responsible parenthood, which today, rightly enough, is much insisted upon, but which at the same time should be rightly understood. Thus we do well to consider responsible parenthood in the light of its varied, legitimate, and interrelated aspects. With regard to the biological processes, responsible parenthood means an awareness of and respect for their proper functions. In the procreative faculty, the human mind discerns biological laws that apply to the human person. With regard to man's innate drives and emotions, responsible parenthood means that man's reason and will must exert control over them. With regard to physical, economic, psychological, and social conditions, responsible parenthood is exercised by those who prudently and generously decide to have more children, and by those who, for serious reasons and with due respect to moral precepts, decide not to have additional children for either a certain or an indefinite period of time. Responsible parenthood, as we use the term here, has one further essential aspect of paramount importance. It concerns the objective moral order which was established by God, and of which a right conscience is the true interpreter. In a word, the exercise of responsible parenthood requires that husband and wife, keeping a right order of priorities, recognize their own duties toward God, themselves, their families, and human society. From this it follows that they are not free to act as they choose in the service of transmitting life, as if it were wholly up to them to decide what is the right course to follow. On the contrary, they are bound to ensure that what they do corresponds to the will of God the Creator. The very nature of marriage and its use makes his will clear, while the constant teaching of the church spells it out." So that's like the first example of like an argument for the church's position. They sort of appeal back to the, you know, absolute moral authority of God and the church in interpreting what God is saying, or what they believe God is saying. And then the sort of last piece of this that I thought was important to the issue here was this. This is actually what made me want to talk about this piece. And that was all sort of background for it, is this one paragraph where the church makes this really interesting comparison. So the Pope writes, "Men rightly observe that a conjugal act imposed on one's partner without regard to his or her condition or personal and reasonable wishes in the matter is no true act of love, and therefore offends the moral order in its particular application to the intimate relationship of husband and wife. If they further reflect, they must also recognize that an act of mutual love, which impairs the capacity to transmit life, which God the Creator, through specific laws, has built into it, frustrates his design, which constitutes the norm of marriage, and contradicts the will of the author of life. Hence, to use this divine gift while depriving it, even if only partially, of its meaning and purpose, is equally repugnant to the nature of man and of woman, and is consequently in opposition to the plan of God and his holy will. But to experience the gift of married love while respecting the laws of conception is to acknowledge that one is not the master of the sources of life, but rather the minister of the design established by the Creator. Just as man does not have unlimited dominion over his body in general, so also, and with more particular reason, he has no such dominion over his specifically sexual faculties. For these are concerned by their very nature with the generation of life of which God is the source. Human life is sacred. All men must recognize that fact. Our predecessor, Pope John the 23rd, recalled. From its very inception, it reveals the creating hand of God."
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I think at least one thing, I guess, listening to it that I was kind of, I don't know, interested by or stuck out with me is just the term, was it responsible parenthood? Just like, I don't know, when I was thinking of responsible parenthood, at least before when you first said it, in terms of like, oh, like making sure like your children are, you know, cared for and provided for, but also, I guess, thinking of it in a kind of a religious sense of like, this is your duty as, you know, a human who is able to procreate, like this is what your responsibility is as made explicit by God and the church. But I also kind of wonder, so they said, you know, it's not necessarily up to the person to decide, like, you know, how many children or such is right for them, but like, how, I guess, how, I don't know, this is an open question, might not have an answer, like, how would they know, I don't know, based on God and such, like, what is the appropriate, I guess, family plan for them and such? Yeah. I don't know, because I think, yeah, you want to strike a balance between able to provide for your children, but also, I guess, follow what God is telling you? I don't know.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense, what I'm saying? Yeah.
I... I was really struggling to follow some of that context, but I some of the content, but I really valued the context that you gave in between the paragraphs about you're already putting in your analysis. So thank you very much for that.
No problem.
And I'm really curious if you're willing to just answer a general question about your experience in this class, because I ran into you a while ago and I was asking you about this class. And I believe you said that you were raised in some ways Catholic.
Yeah.
And, but maybe this was a new experience to be analyzing religion in this way.
Yeah.
What has been some of the biggest takeaways from this class in general?
Yeah, so that's right. I was raised Catholic. My family goes to church every Sunday. They're pretty devout, and I was at a time extremely, extremely devout. I was even interested in, you know, entering the church like as an ordained person. And that sort of went away. And I think part of the reason I'm in the class in the first place is I started feeling like a bit of a spiritual crisis. I needed to, you know, go back to it and figure out why I wasn't super comfortable with what the church was, you know, teaching and why it sort of felt inconsistent. So to actually answer your question, it's just, I'm seeing more examples of the inconsistency that made me uncomfortable and made me not want to participate as much in the church. But at the same time, I'm contextualizing it better. I'm getting more of a sense for why it's that way. Documents like this, I think, are really, you know, they really illustrate that a bit. because sort of one of the big things I've realized with the things we've read and talked about is sort of underlying this whole thing. It's really subtle, but I don't know, maybe you also noticed this, like it's directed at men, and it's not using, the Pope isn't using men to mean like people, you know, how folks often do. He's actually addressing the male presence in these relationships. I think that last paragraph in particular, it's really clear that he's actually talking to husbands. So the big takeaway from that idea is that there's this really patriarchal thing underlying the church. There's this really binary gender separation in the church. Even that earlier bit about how, you know, the marriage between a husband and wife is representative of the marriage between Christ and the church, already, like, we attribute these feminine characteristics to the church body and then masculine characteristics to Christ, and then everything is based off of that. There are no ordained women in the Catholic Church, and it's sort of centered around that idea. So that sort of context and that sticking to this sort of binary gender idea in the church, that really has illuminated a lot of the things that made me uncomfortable with the church in the first place.
I guess that makes me think earlier in the reading, I think the Pope was talking about, I think it was like one of two things. It was talking about women and kind of like a resurgence of, I don't know, responsibility or just kind of like freedom. And that kind of irked me a little bit, because it was like, just the way, I can't remember. Do you have the quote? Do you mind reading
it
again?
The really early quote, also noteworthy is a new understanding of the dignity of woman in society, of the value of conjugal love and marriage and the relationship.
It's like, we forgot about, like, there's these women and that they have a place too. Like, we'll just add them in there now. Like, whatever, hundreds or thousands of years later.
That
definitely, I mean, to me, that kind of solidified what you're talking about, is like, women are not the focal point of this experience, of this religion.
Would you like to go into a song and then discuss more later, or were you just about to say something?
No.
All right, yeah, I think that's a good segue.
Okay.
What do we have queued up?
Well, I was going to say that my parents are listening, and my dad is from a Catholic family, so I think this is very interesting, hopefully, to him as well. And he suggested a song. I haven't heard it before. Can I play it?
Sure. Yeah.
So it's a song from Loretta Lynn.
show me the world, but all I've seen of this old world is a bed and a doctor bill. I'm tearing down your brooder house, 'cause now I've got the pill. All these years I've stayed at home while you had all your fun, and every year that's gone by, another baby's come. There's gonna be some changes made right here on Nursery Hill. You set this chicken your last time, 'cause now I've got the pill. This old maternity dress I've got is going in the garbage. The clothes I'm wearing from now on won't take up so much yardage. Mini skirts, hot pants, and a few little fancy frills. Yeah, I'm making up for all those years since I've got the pill. I'm tired of all your crowing, how you and your hens play, while holding a couple in my arms, another's on the way. This chicken's done tore up her nest, and I'm ready to make a deal. And you can't afford to turn it down, 'cause you know I've got the pill. This incubator is overused, because you've kept it filled. The feeling good comes easy now, since I've got the pill. It's getting dark, it's roosting time, tonight's too good to be real. Oh, but daddy, don't you worry none, 'cause mama's got the pill. Oh, daddy, don't you worry none, 'cause mama's got the pill.
Thank you.
Okay, you just heard God is a Woman from Ariana Grande. So putting some pop in there. And that relates in some ways to what we were talking about of the role, the binary held up within religion or the Catholic Church of gender and also power structures.
Yeah, patriarchal elements that are very present there as well. I guess so. One question, we were having a little discussion during the song, and one thing I was kind of wondering about is like what, I guess, explicitly is the church's position on contraception? Like, yay, nay, like, it's up to the man's interpretation. Like, what would you define it as?
Yeah, so to my knowledge, there hasn't been any official statement from the church since this on contraception. It's pretty rare for the church to go back on something it's already said. Because of this sort of, the idea is that the Pope and the sort of upper parts of the hierarchy are completely infallible. Anything they say is how it is because of their position and their relationship to God. They cannot make a mistake in any ruling they make or any doctrine that they put forth. So it's pretty rare to have a future pope go back and say, well, so-and-so was kind of wrong about this thing, so I'm going to say the opposite. So to my knowledge, there hasn't been anything like that to address this issue. So the official position is still sort of hard line. It is not acceptable to make use of artificial contraception to prevent pregnancies. And the only acceptable thing is sort of natural family planning, so using the menstrual cycle to predict, you know, fertile and infertile periods. That is acceptable and is considered different and okay when compared to, you know, the pill or condoms, whatever. But it does seem that most members of the church nowadays, and this has been my experience and the people I know as well from the church, they just don't care that that's the official position. It's sort of commonplace for Catholic families to make use of contraception, and it's considered okay colloquially, even though officially it's not okay. Which is that's sort of an interesting thing, because, you know, what's the role of what, you know, the members of the church actually believe compared to what the Pope says, or should they have a voice in what the doctrine is? Because it's sort of unilateral right now, right? The Pope can say a thing, and then that is the thing. That is the truth as far as the church is concerned. And the people's voice doesn't matter so much. So that's sort of an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, it seems like a very top-down thing. Like, what comes from above is the gospel, like, literally. whereas, I don't know, in more like a democracy, it's like, you know, people... Well, I mean, I don't know if that's fair to compare religion and politics, but that's what I chose to use. But I was also, I guess not to put you on a spot as a Catholic, but I'm trying to think, like, are there other, I don't know, examples of concepts or ideas where it's like the church has this one very strong idea, but the people who are actually practicing are like, you know, we're going to do it kind of like how we choose to do so.
Yeah. The sort of big one is abortion. That's probably the most present issue for most Catholics, and it's not sort of an overwhelming majority that feel that it's acceptable, and that the church's position is incorrect. It's actually a pretty even split between members of the church, as far as I know. You know, half the Catholics are like, this is okay, this is an okay thing to do in the right circumstances, and the other half are like, no, pro-life, you know, hard line. So, this isn't the only example of positions the church has taken that the people, you know, tend to disagree, or there is, you know, a plurality of disagreement. LGBTQ rights are another thing. I'm not sure about the split there. If I had to guess, it's probably also 50-50-ish. There are, you know, there's a lot of, there was some stuff in the news recently about, gay priests, you know, they are ordained and they are practicing priests and they, you know, hold mass and stuff, but there's this huge stigma against them from the official members of the church, like the higher ups. so they're in sort of a weird liminal position, being gay men, but also being Catholic. Is the position is sort of like, you know, you can't get married if you're gay. There's no such thing as, you know, marriage sanctity between two people of the same sex. So, you know, does it really matter for a priest? It's sort of unclear. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of issues that it seems that there's a pretty strong, significant disagreement between, you know, the actual practicing members and the hierarchy.
What I'm noticing from these few instances of controversy or disconnect between church leaders and, or like the Pope and practicing Catholics, is that almost all of those center around some aspect of sexuality, of sexual behavior or sexual orientation. And it's very interesting to me to think about the religious leaders theoretically not engaging in sexual behaviors at all, being taking a vow of chastity, and yet, like, that, how that they're, informs they're, a disconnect. Yeah. And it almost makes sense then that that is where there's been a lot of conversations around how should this really be, because that's something that leaders can't connect to people on. Like, yeah. if one group has vowed not to do this and the other group is, you know, families and making children and engaging in sexual acts. That's
something we've talked a lot about in class, is just, you know, and there's this lack of perspective, because you said it perfectly, everyone in the hierarchy has, you know, made a promise that they're not going to engage in these things. And maybe they did before they were priests, but, you know, now they've been priests for 30 or 40 years, right? Like, they have a huge disconnect from, you know, real life and what people are actually doing. And then on top of that, there are other forms of disconnect, because there are no, you know, women in the ordained ministry. There's no women's perspective that's actually being taken into account at pretty much any level. You know, there's, because of the few, like, hardline stances on, you know, LGBTQ issues, there's really no queer people talking about these things or bringing their perspective. There's this. I mean, it's mostly just a frustrating problem that, you know, there's, you know, you have a bunch of sort of old men just making all these decisions about this faith tradition, and they have the power as a faith tradition to just not care about these other perspectives, even when people are like, hey, you should maybe pay attention to this because it's relevant to me and my body and my experience and my life. So I don't know if there's a good solution or answer, but it would require some really radical changes in the church.
That's fascinating. Just seems to be a lot of disconnect, and I'm sure that is not only true within the Catholic Church. I am Jewish, but I'm not a practicing Jew, so I'm not going to pretend that I have a lot of insight into what goes on within the hierarchical structure, and I don't think it's not nearly as organized as the Catholic Church in that sense. And there are also multiple sects, but I feel like there is I feel like there is kind of this disconnect sometimes between the people in power and those who are kind of, I guess you could say, below, or the practicing members. So I just think it's interesting. I wonder, I don't know, going forward. I mean, contraception is still something, obviously, that's talked about and debated, you know, not just within religion, but within our society, in terms of, like, oh, should we be giving people insurance coverage for these types of things and such, especially, I guess, for religious companies or organizations. But I wonder, going forward, what kind of doctrines the church will be making on what issues. And have you read any more, I guess, recent documents from the Vatican?
And you said this one was from, like, 1960s?
Yeah, this is from 1968.
Okay.
Yeah. I haven't personally read anything more recent. The trouble is that, you know, I think the thing that's really, really in focus now is the sort of abuse scandals in the church. And that's sort of taking over everyone's time in terms of thinking about what the church is doing. Because that, you know, that's also related to this issue, you know. Does it have something to do with the chastity vows, right? Does it, you know, like, why are these abuses happening in the church, especially if they're, you know, walking around as if they're paragons of, you know, moral superiority, right? It seems a little ironic that something so horrible would be going on. You know, so many, like, children are affected by this, and not just, like, young boys, but, you know, everyone. Those are the stories you hear about most. But, you know, it's sort of unclear, you know, what the status of that is and what's actually going to happen, what the church is going to do about it, and, you know, how they're going to hold themselves accountable. So it's I don't know, it's not a bad thing that it's distracting from these other things, because it's really important. But I don't know, I think it's really, it's unclear what the church will come forward with in response to that and all these other issues.
Something that I was thinking about in relation to your comment, Jenna, about, well, I think it's interesting. I didn't know that, Jenna, you are from a Jewish background, and
I'm a very laissez-faire. That's
okay. I feel like I in some ways bridge between Jenna and you, Chris, because one side of my family is Catholic and one side of my family is Jewish. So a little bit of both of those, although I can't claim to be knowledgeable that to that great of an extent about either. But I was thinking earlier on about in Judaism how there are different levels of observancy. There are reform or conservative or orthodox groups and synagogues and all of these things. And so I have two questions here. First of all, but I'm going to say them both. So first of all, with the, you know, 50% of Catholics who may be much more open to LGBTQ rights with or pro-choice or things like that, is that considered more of a reform, in to use the Jewish term, sect of Catholicism? And let's go with that, and then I'll say my second thing.
Yeah, there is no, like, official difference. There's, you know, there's the Roman Catholic tradition and the Eastern Orthodox tradition, but that doesn't correlate at all to the
ideological in that sense.
Yeah, there's no official split. You know, there isn't, like, there's this set of Catholic churches over here who are all the pro-choice ones, and this one over here who are all the pro-life ones, and then they sort of behave differently. They're still all responding to the same hierarchy. I guess maybe unofficially people would consider, you know, one more progressive or liberal than the other, but that's not, like, an official stance that the church takes. They don't, as far as I know, I haven't seen this before, and I can't imagine they would, since they have, like, they have an answer to the question in the doctrine already, so they know which one they think is right, that they assert is right. But there's no recognition of the difference as, like, a notable distinction between those sort of groups of people.
Okay, interesting. The second thing I was thinking about is in relation to classes on religion at Tufts, which I have never taken one of. I noticed that this semester there are two different classes being offered. I think one is an ex-college class and one is a more official Tufts class that look at queer. Our listeners can hear that beeping. Okay. But I was really intrigued to see that. And I think that is, I wonder if that would be also seen at other universities, or if that's really something that's unique to Tufts academic interests or whatever. But there's one class called Queerness and Rabbinic Literature and another one about Jewish identity and queerness. And so I'm really curious to think about how different religions differ in thinking about sexuality and just why that is. And maybe it comes back to some of those patriarchal structures within the church that you were talking about, or, you know, so many other things that we could talk about for hours.
Yeah.
But I was surprised to see not one, but two classes on that exact topic relating to Judaism.
That's really cool. Yeah, I don't know. It seems that, like, these, at least in Christian traditions, you know, like Catholicism, and Catholicism especially, has been, like, kind of bad about sticking to its guns for a long time. I don't know. There's this tendency to, like, over-categorize people, and the church kind of held on to that. You know, they had these two nice gender boxes that, oh, okay, I can just take everyone and throw them into one box or the other, and then they just sort of stuck with that, even though there's tons of good science that, you know, indicates that, you know, hey, those boxes aren't exactly right. Maybe you should stop basing everything around those two boxes. That would probably be good for everyone. So yeah, it is. That's a really interesting question, because there are Christian denominations that I've looked into that are extremely open-minded about these, you know, really, really hard moral questions and these questions about identity. And it's sort of like, okay, well, where did they go right, and where has Catholicism sort of gone wrong in this sort of binary system, or, you know, over-categorizing its members and trying to build a theology around that? Yeah, that is a cool question, and it's cool that we have classes about it.
Yeah, definitely. I think we should probably start to wrap things up, though.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to put on a song, and then we will come back on air to do a PSA, because we almost forgot to do that for the hour. And if we have any, are there any other final thoughts from either of you about this? Any other questions?
No, I mean, I think I have a lot of thoughts or questions about religion, but not for the time, not for now. but yeah, thank you so much for being on our show, Chris.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And if anyone listening out there would like to be on our show, you can email us at academicsonair@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you and hear what you've been reading.
Yep. Okay, here we're going into a Kanye West song.
We at war. We at war with terrorism, racism, but most of all, we at war with ourselves. God, show me the way, because the devil's trying to break me down. Know what the Midwest is, young and restless, but restless might snatch your necklace, and next these might jack your Lexus. Somebody tell these who Kanye West is. I walk through the valley of the shadow where death is. Top floor, the view alone will leave you breathless. Try to catch it, it's kinda hard getting choked by the Texas. Yeah, now check the method. They be asking us questions, harass and arrest us, saying we eat pieces of like you for breakfast, huh? Y'all eat pieces of what's the basis? We ain't going nowhere but got suits and cases. A trunk full of coke, rental car from Avis. My mama used to say only Jesus could save us. Well, mama, I know I act the fool, but I'll be gone till November, I got packs to move. I hope
Jesus,
God, show me the way, because the devil's trying to break me down.
Jesus,
the only thing that I pray is that my feet don't fail me now.
Jesus,
and I don't think there's nothing I could do now to right my wrongs. I wanna talk to God, but I'm afraid, cause we ain't spoken so long. God, show me the way, because the devil's trying to break me down. The only thing that I pray is that my feet don't fail me now. And I don't think there's nothing I could do now to right my wrongs. I wanna talk to God, but I'm afraid, cause we ain't spoken so long. To the hustlers, killers, murderers, drug dealers, even the scribblers.
Jesus was with them.
To the victims of welfare, feel we living in hell here. Hell yeah.
Jesus was with them.
Now here
we hear. He wanna see thee more clearly. I know he hear me when my feet get weary, cause we're the almost nearly extinct. We rappers as role models, we rap, we don't think. I ain't here to argue about his facial features, but here to convert atheists into believers. I'm just trying to say the way school need teachers, the way Kathleen need a Regis, that's the way I need Jesus. So here go my single doll, radio needs this. They said you can rap about anything except for Jesus. That means guns, sex, lies, videotape. But if I talk about God, my record won't get played, huh? Well, if this take away from my spins, which it probably take away from my ends, then I hope it take away from my sins and bring the day that I'm dreaming about. Next time I'm in the club, everybody screaming out, God, show me the way, because the devil's trying to break me down. The only thing that I pray is that my feet don't fail me now.
Okay, this is Academics on Air, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thank you for joining us this hour, and we may have a pause for the next two Sundays, depending on our spring break schedules, but I think I'm going to be here this coming Sunday, so you can tune in for maybe some, you know, stressful midterms topic in Academics on Air next week. We'll see what that is. So we're going to have a public service announcement to close out our hour. Take it away.
Here are some numbers to think about. Some numbers to think about. The United States has less than 5% of the planet's population, but incarcerates 24% of its prisoners and accounts for 43% of the world's total military spending. This has been a public service message from WMFO and Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Thank you. Some numbers to think about. Okay, heading into a song by Metronomy.
Get out.